Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and welcome to the Basketball and Life podcast. My guest on today's episode is Michelle Duran. She's now the head women's basketball coach at the University of Findlay, starting her second season. You may remember that Coach Duran joined me for episode 28 of the podcast, back when she was the retired head coach from Ohio Northern University. She had a legendary career at Ohio Northern University and a brief retirement from coaching that saw her journey into athletic administration, and she's back on the sidelines now. She will lead the Findlay program into her second season here this fall. I hope you enjoy today's conversation with legendary head coach Michelle Duran of the University of Findlay. Coach Duran, thanks so much for agreeing to do this again. I know for regular listeners to the podcast, they may remember that you were on an episode in what I guess we now call season one. I think it was episode 28 back in 2020. We sat down and had a long form interview, and you told your story and your background in coaching. And I would encourage anybody that hasn't had a chance to go back and listen to that maybe before they continue listening here. But the reason I wanted to have you back on is the last time we talked, you were the quote unquote retired head coach headed to the assistant athletic director's job at Ohio Northern University. And a little bit's changed in that time. So how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, a little bit's changed. Just found a different place and maybe back in the old job I was in before. So, but yeah, everything's great.
Well, you finished that season of 1920 at Ohio Northern, and that was the spring. I mean, basically D3's, if you didn't make the national tournament, you really didn't feel the impact. I mean, the season had wrapped up, but the national tournament got going and got shut down in 2020. And then life, as we all know, it changed for everybody. And you were transitioning out of the coaching job and into the assistant AD thing. And I have to admit, at that time, and you know, you and I talked about it back then, my feelings on it were mixed, because it was really clear to me that coaching is what you do extremely well, and you still had a tremendous amount to offer. And at the same time, I felt like if there was anybody I'd ever worked for or worked with that might be really, really well suited for an administrative role, you would probably be that person from an organizational standpoint and ability to build relationships. It felt like that might be a really good fit. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like making that transition, and particularly what the 2 years in that role were like, knowing what you had to do in terms of the COVID stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was ready. You know, Ohio Northern at the time, I had to make a decision, because they were making that associate or assistant AD position a full-time position, and not, you know, we couldn't coach with it. So I'd kind of been doing both things. I was the SWA and I was coaching, but they wanted to make that position a full-time position with no coaching. And so I thought, you know, it was my 30th year of coaching. I thought, well, maybe this is the best time to go ahead and transition into a different role. I was hoping Mark would get the head job, and he did, which was great. And so we went that route. You know, and it wasn't that I liked the position. There was a lot of things that were good about it. I guess I don't know if you want to say COVID did me in, but the first year was really, really rough. It was just constant. You just never knew what was going to happen next. I can't even begin to describe the amount of meetings, Zoom meetings especially, that we had to do in a week's time. I mean, there'd be sometimes five or six of those a day. It was always taking bad news to the coaches. It was just a really, really rough year, but I got through it. The next year, you know, we were still dealing with COVID, not quite as bad. You know, but I missed coaching, and, you know, but it was going all right. I enjoyed what I was doing. But, you know, the job at Findlay, the basketball job at Findlay, happened to open up, and I thought long and hard about it. I've lived in Findlay the entire time I've worked at Northern, so for over 20 years. The AD at the time lived down the street from me. So I just went down to talk to her when the position opened up, just to see, you know, pick her brain, and it was wide open, and I just decided I'm going to go for it. So I did, and got lucky and got the job. So with the AD thing, I could have probably done for the rest of my career and been okay, but I really miss being around the kids and kind of missing being in that basketball world.
Well, you and I mean, shared a few seasons together with me as a volunteer assistant in the program. And I can distinctly remember like the 2018-19 season. I mean, there were some rough patches in there, and you talked a little bit during the struggling times, the difficult times, about maybe it's almost time, you know, for me to be thinking about what's next for me. And even at the time that you did that, it, like you said, it felt like maybe it was the right time. 30 years is a long time. You had grinded away to create a program and really build a program almost from scratch that was as consistent and as good as anybody could be in Division III almost. And so when you made that transition, it felt like the right time. Now, I wouldn't be so brash as to say that COVID happened to push you back to coaching, but when you're doing the thing that you think is your next step and you're doing it under the pressure that COVID created, it had to be difficult to even really feel like you were actually getting a true taste of that job. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah. I don't think I probably gave it enough of a chance. And honestly, John, had that Finley job not opened up, or had this job not opened up, I should say, I would still be at Northern doing the assistant AD job. I would not have left for any other position than this one. So, I mean, I think it was just one of those things, you know, I wasn't super happy and this job opened up and I thought, you know, I never got to do anything with scholarships and I just thought, man, that'd be kind of cool to try. So, I mean, honestly, I probably didn't give it a great chance in that administrative role. But you know, sometimes I think things happen for a reason and I don't know, the right job opened up. So I guess I just went for it.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of the way I look at that thing is, you know, there's, I guess a lot of different ways to look at every scenario that unfolds in your life. But when you venture into something that's away from the thing that you've loved for so long, I mean, you're also doing it with the realization that I've been in college athletics for 30 years. I mean, I'm not sure anybody would be expected to do what you were doing and say, hey, you know, I'm not particularly happy. I know what I love to do, but I'll give this another 4 or 5 years to see if it becomes what I want. When you have an opportunity like you had, and I don't know if you'll remember this or not, but I had asked you once when I was on the staff, hey, if there's a next step after Northern, what would it be for you? You'd mentioned at the time, you said, I think maybe administration would be good for me, but you also said, you know, it is interesting with where I live and where Finley's located and the scholarship opportunity that I've never gotten to do. I think you mentioned, you said, if that job ever became available, if there was a job I would leave Northern for, I think Finley would be something I would have to take a look at. So when that opportunity presents itself, I'm not sure that it made any sense to do anything except what you did. But what I'd like to get into a little bit is, you know, the podcast is Basketball and Life. So when you are transitioning through life and there are people in your life and you know, you've got a foundation built where you've got your parents are important to you, Brenda's there, and you've got to make some decisions that it's a big decision to walk away. That's a big decision. It's a big challenge to sit in that office and or be active at those events and do that thing through the COVID. And it's another big decision to pursue the Finley thing. Can you talk about what it was like with your family and how you approached it from those conversations as well?
Yeah, you're right. It was a really big decision because, you know, basketball took up a lot of time in my life. And the administration piece also, I mean, obviously I was at the university or at there a lot for the different events. But I think with basketball, you know, recruiting never ends in basketball. So I was telling, you know, I was going back into that where, you know, now summer again, I'm going to have to be recruiting. So it was a very difficult decision. It didn't go very well with Brenda right away, understandably so. But, and my mom, you know, she knew I loved coaching and she wasn't surprised. Unfortunately, my dad had passed away already. I think my dad would have loved the decision because they loved watching, you know, the games and stuff. But it wasn't easy initially, but ultimately I was happier. And I mean, that's what really was what made the difference. And the other part of it, this sounds crazy, but I get to drive 5 minutes to work. I was driving 35 minutes to work. So yep. That was a little part of it, you know, and that helped sell my argument a little bit. but yeah, you're right. It was a very difficult life decision from that standpoint, you know.
Well, and I also,
as an administrator, but coaching is a little different, as you know.
Right. No question. I mean, it's just from an energy standpoint and those things that the time commitment's big, no matter what job you do, if you're wired the way you're wired, because you're going to do a job well, that's going to be a big part of it, but it is a little bit of a different level. So I guess I want to tie in your experience on the administrative side and what you saw during COVID and whether it impacted you in terms of your mentality about coming back to coaching. And specifically what I'm addressing here is I think the entire coaching world was forced to become infinitely more aware of mental health concerns with their athletes than maybe they ever had been before. And I would assume that sitting on the administrative side of it, you were probably dealing with coaches who were being confronted by issues like that, that they hadn't really dealt with before either. Was there an impact that the COVID experience had on you, maybe as you went back into coaching, that you could, you knew you were going to have to respond to?
Yeah, great question. I mean, the mental took on, and everybody in our little world, you know, in the athletic world, coaches, I kept, as an administrator, it was difficult. I couldn't even imagine coaching during that. And then to watch the athletes, it was really sad. It's funny that you asked me that, because I was just talking with my new assistant about that, how much more cognizant we are about their mental health. I have somebody come in and speak to our team about mental health actually this year when we do our retreat. I don't remember ever really talking a lot about that when I was coaching before. So it definitely has impacted me and how I look at our athletes and kind of take, you know, we always kind of look at their physical health and how important that is, obviously, but their mental health, I never really paid it as much of attention as I should have. But COVID really, really made me do that as administrator, and I'm especially doing it now as a coach. So well, you're absolutely right.
And it seems like I recognize more, I don't know if it's true with every set of athletes, but at least the athletes I've been around, and you and I talked back in 2020, 2021, I ended up getting forced back into high school coaching. I say forced, hell, I wanted to go coach my son's team, but you and I talked at that time, and we'll get back into that momentarily. But coming through that, I have just seen more of a willingness almost from athletes, the handful that I've been around and the couple different teams that I've dealt with, that there's more of a willingness to be vulnerable, to be honest about that stuff, and to actually want to talk about it when, let's be honest, I think if we go back to 2017, 2018, there was enough stigma attached to it that I think people weren't very willing to open up when they might have had a need. And now it feels like maybe they are a little more open to it.
Agreed. And I think probably that stems from, you know, seeing some of the, you know, some of our more famous athletes, you know, Simone Biles is now getting back into gymnastics. You know, heck, she dropped out of the Olympics because of her mental health. And you're seeing a lot more of those types of athletes come out and talk about it. And I think it makes it more okay for our athletes to talk about it. You're right. You know, even just 6-7 years ago, I don't think kids would have been so vulnerable. In fact, when they talked about their mental health, I think they looked that they were soft or, you know, unfortunately I probably looked at them that way. I hope I didn't, but you know, we probably all did. And I can't imagine when, you know, back when you and I were athletes,
yeah,
we would never have talked about this stuff.
No, you're 1,000% right. And I think on the whole, it's a huge net positive if athletes can feel comfortable with being vulnerable with their coaches. I think there's nothing but gain there, really.
Absolutely. I think it's so important to be vulnerable with your coaches, with your teammates. I think it creates trust. And, you know, when you trust each other, you play a lot better too. You know, you're together. I don't know. I've always felt like that. I think it's a positive for sure. The way it happened was a positive, but I think, I mean, COVID, I look at COVID and it's done a lot of good and it's done a lot of bad.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it took a lot of emotional toll and physical toll on a lot of people. A lot of people died from COVID, but you know, I think that maybe it allowed us to maybe step back and look at ourselves a little bit too, and maybe rethink the way we were doing things.
Well, and also maybe I'm wrong about this. If I am, you can tell me. But I also kind of wonder a little bit if coming out of it and doing it from the side that you did, if it maybe clarified for you, hey, this whatever this is time that I've got left here, I want to have the time doing what I love. And now I can appreciate and value even more what it was that I loved about that job, that profession that you're now back to.
I know you're totally right. You're totally right. It's kind of come a little bit full circle, I guess. I don't know. I just, I really, really like being around the student athletes. And when I was away from, when I was in the administration position, I wasn't around them like I wanted to be. And I think, you know, it was good that I did that. It allowed me to see it, allowed me to appreciate what I was doing before a little bit more. So, you know, in the long run, I think it's going to be, it was both jobs have been great for me. So we'll see what happens with this job. I don't know how long I'll last, but we'll see what happens.
We talked briefly during the first podcast in 2020 when you were on, and I had asked the question at that time, do you feel like your 30 years as a coach will give you some things that will translate well into your role as an administrator? Can you apply the things that you believe in as a coach and help it? Will it help you be successful as an administrator? And at the time you said you very clearly thought that that was the case. In retrospect, did you see, or can you look back and see the things that you did as an administrator, where you applied philosophies and basic tenets of what you were as a coach and you felt like it was helpful?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I think no matter whether you're coaching a team or you're working, you know, what I was doing was working with a team of coaches. And I had to use my coaching. The things I did with my team weren't all that much different than I did with our coaches. You know, it was important for us to be together as a group, as a staff. So I did a lot of those things, or called on a lot of those things that I used as a coach. I also think it gave, you know, I had the perspective to give to Tom. You know, I had a coaching perspective, so I could tell him, well, this is what the coaches are going to think about a certain decision maybe he was mulling over, or, you know, some of the things that we had to deal with. I could give him that coach's perspective, and I think he appreciated that because he hasn't coached. So I think, you know, all of those things really helped me. I don't know that it was all that much different other than I was working with maybe a group of older people.
Yeah.
The hard thing I will tell you, though, is when you go from being a coach to an administrator, I think this was the hardest thing for me, is I wasn't one of them anymore.
Yeah.
And I definitely could tell the difference that I wasn't one of them anymore. And that was really, really hard because many of those people are my friends and they're still my friends. And it's not that we weren't friends after that, but they were more careful around me. It was just a difficult feeling to describe, but it was different. There were also things in that job that there's things that I found out or had to know about that I didn't like knowing about. If I'm perfectly honest. I liked sort of being in my own little world and not knowing certain things.
And, yeah.
I was privy to a lot of things that I couldn't control. You know, maybe I didn't like them very much and I would like things to see some change, but I couldn't control that. And that was really difficult because I've always been sort of in control of what we were doing.
Well, I'm going to ask this question and I hope it's not too sticky, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot very much, but I heard a statement once from Gerald Ford that when he was in the Congress, he would look at the people on Pennsylvania Avenue and think, what in the hell are they thinking with the decisions that they're making? And then he became vice president, and then he became president, and he would look back at Congress and he couldn't get his head around what they were thinking. So I guess when you say you became privy to things you hadn't been before and you learned new things that maybe when you were a coach, you would have preferred just to kind of stay in your bubble. When you were on that other side, did it at least at any point cause you to say, hey, when I was coaching, if I'd have known those things, I might have felt differently about some of the decisions that were getting made?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it gave me a new perspective on, you know, especially for Tom. I mean, he has a difficult job. He has to, you know, he has to fight for us on one hand, and then he has to do what the university wants him to do. And it's difficult. And it gave me a new perspective on some of the things that maybe I would have been upset about as a coach. And now I found out the other side of it, and I understood it better, you know, for sure. You know, university business and all of that is not things that you are not things that you think about on a day-to-day basis when you're coaching.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So now you have to think about as an administrator, and you have to think about, well, what's the best for the university? You know, all the things that we don't see, I got to see. And so it has given me a new perspective even as a coach now. I don't question anything now our new AD, Jim Givens at Findlay, does, because I know what he goes through. I know the kinds of problems that he has. So I don't really, you know, I think he appreciates that. You know, I talk to him about that sometimes. I understand it a little better now, so it's given me a much better perspective.
Well, when you're going through the transition that you did, and you talked about the fact that there was a difference in your relationship with the coaches that, that had been your colleagues and are your friends, and you could feel that difference. How challenging was it for you from a leadership perspective? Because you still had leadership responsibilities. Leadership is something that you've always embraced and taken very seriously and tried to get really good at. Were you able to focus on leadership principles during that, or was the awkwardness and the dynamic different enough that it really impacted your ability as a leader?
Probably a little bit of both, if that sounds weird. I used my leadership skills probably a lot more with our younger coaches, mm-hmm. and I was able to do some mentoring in that respect. It was much more difficult, as you can imagine, with coaches who have been there for 20 plus years. And again, I was one of their colleagues, and now I'm, you know, I never think of myself as somebody's boss, but I was somebody that, you know, made decisions that impacted them. And one of the things I was part of is I was doing the budget. So that's always a pretty difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
You know? With those older coaches, I had to, I just took a step back a lot of times, John, and I tried to do the best I could to mentor some of our younger coaches, and I tried to let those people who'd been there for that long period of time, just do their thing. They knew what they were doing, and if they needed my help, I was there for them. But I never approached it like I wanted to be their boss or. But it was difficult and awkward at times. I mean, and coaches like myself, we're all type A's. We're all very competitive. We're all very territorial. And when you have, it's kind of like herding cats sometimes. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, and I include myself in that because I'm sure I wasn't the easiest person to lead either. So when you put all of us in a room, I think good things can happen, but you've got to be patient and you've got to be willing to, you know, do a little. There's conflict involved, let's put it that way.
Yeah, making sausage, you don't want people to see how that gets done.
Exactly.
Just let them eat the sausage. Yep.
Yes. I don't really know a kind way to say it, but that's perfect.
Well, listen, what I want to do is just take a short break, and then I want to get off of this stuff and get onto some basketball stuff and get into the taking over and creating and establishing and starting to build your own program for the third time in your career.
Perfect.
Hi, this is Coach John Cook, and I wanted to take just a quick second and a short break from the podcast to say thank you so much to those of you who regularly listen to Basketball and Life. I appreciate your listenership and support more than you know, and I wanted to give you a heads up on some things that have changed here at the podcast. We now have our own page on X. It's B-Ball and Life Pod, at B-Ball and Life Pod, if you want to get information on the podcast, upcoming episodes, or possibly activate archived episodes or share information with us. Feel free to reach out at B-Ball and Life Pod if you want to get to us on X. I also want to let you know that we are developing a website for the podcast. That website will be up and running sometime in the very near future. And there you can see all archived episodes. You can get show notes. You can subscribe to a newsletter. There's the possibility of purchasing merchandise for the Basketball and Life podcast. And if you are a regular supporter of or would like to be a supporter of the podcast, we're going to be shifting our focus from using Spotify for podcasters to using our website to allow people to support the podcast. I just want to give you a heads up on that. And again, stay tuned because those changes will be coming very soon. Thanks again for listening to Basketball and Life. Now back to the podcast. So, Coach, let's actually dive into the coaching part of it. Now, I just said something to you off mic that in the fall of 2020, when I had to shut down this podcast the first time because of the circumstances that led me back to high school coaching, I came to see you in your office, and I kind of almost had to sneak in because it was, you got to come up the back steps, and everybody's got, you know, it was COVID. Nobody was supposed to be anywhere. And we were able to meet, but we just had to be selective about the timing and how it worked. But you were in the fall of 2020 as an administrator dealing with the brunt of COVID the way that not even high school programs could have conceived of with testing and all the things that were a part of it. And you and I got to sit down because I wanted to talk about the matchup. And you talked on our first podcast in 2020 about the matchup zone that your high school coach taught you. And you can feel free to recap as much of that as you would like to give credit where it's due. But we got talking that day, and I could just feel like, hey, the ability to close the office door and not be in COVID mode and just be in basketball mode was really good for you. Like, it was, you could see a difference in you in the office at that time. So when the opportunity to dive back in is there, it's a place like Findlay that you're clearly very interested in. What I haven't asked you about yet is having that motivation, knowing that it's an exciting opportunity. Can you describe the program that you took over and what it presented to you in terms of opportunity versus challenge?
Well, I mean, the program was not in great shape. But I do think there was a ton of opportunity. There still is, obviously. But the program was in tough shape. Honestly, when I first got on the floor with the girls, you know, I don't know how to say this nicely, John, but there was a lot of kids there that it was tough. I wasn't sure. Like, we had better teams at Northern. It wasn't what I was expecting in terms of talent. Great kids, I will tell you that. They were really, really, they're really good kids. But they had been through so much. So there were seven seniors on our team last year. You know, they had just gotten through COVID as well, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
None of them had a normal season in college yet. Last year was most of their first year of really having a full schedule, normal practices, anything that looked like a basketball season. Last year was the first for them. So that in itself was very difficult. Not to mention, you know, they've gotten used to one way with the prior coach, who I will tell you is a great X's and O's guy. You know, I don't know if he got through COVID very well. You know, all of it, I'm sure, was difficult.
Sure.
But they're used to doing things one way, and now I'm coming in and I'm doing things a different way. Best player at the time, had transferred out and went down to Tampa. And that kid, everything they did ran through that kid. And they had two other seniors who had graduated who were also very good. And, you know, so everything kind of worked through those. So I was dealing with a lot of kids who hadn't had time on the floor, who never been in a normal season, who now has two new coaches. And it was just hard. It was hard for everybody. It was a great opportunity for me, you know, to start out with kind of a clean slate. But at the same time, you know, for a lot of those kids, it was just a difficult change. A change is hard. I can tell you it's a lot. Even when I first got to Northern, it was very similar. You know, we had a difficult first year.
Right.
But I think you have to go through those kinds of things to get to what's good. And I'll never forget this past year. It was super difficult for me. It was very difficult for the girls. I'll never forget those girls, and I'll always give them credit because I think we're going to get things right, and they're going to be the start of that. Unfortunately, they don't get the good part of it. And I always told the kids when I started at Northern the same thing, Angie Zinder, all those girls, you know, that we only won 9 games, I think, our first year there. And I told them, I said, when we get to the NCAA tournament, I'm going to shout you guys out. And we did. And I had them come back and talk to our team. And I feel the same way about Findlay. I think things are going to happen really good here. We had to go through some real difficult times last year, but I think it will end up being great.
You know, you and I talked the first time we did this podcast, and I talked about, and I think you were pretty open about the fact that when Division III teams get really good, at some level, it's because they can quote unquote steal scholarship talent to a Division III program. That's how you get good and stay good. And so when you go to a scholarship situation, there can be a really fine line between scholarship player and Division III player. And if the scholarship talent ends up in Division III, it looks great. If the Division III talent ends up with a scholarship, it might not look quite so good. That can be a challenge. And so when you come into that type of a circumstance and change being what it is, how did you prioritize kind of first steps? What was the most important thing you felt like you needed to get done this year? If it was fairly apparent evaluating your talent that, you know, big numbers in the win column might not be on the menu, what was priority one for you?
Recruiting. We had to get out and recruit. I had to learn pretty quickly what Division II players look like, what we had to recruit. And it's pretty similar, you know, when you just said in Division III to get good, you got to get some scholarship kids. In Division II to get good, we got to get some of those kids that are borderline Division I kids.
Right, exactly.
So it's really the same. If you're in the MAC, you get some kids that are going to be Big Ten kids, maybe. You got to get lucky and get one of those kids. You know, if you're at Findlay, I got to get lucky and get somebody who might want to go to Bowling Green. You know, it wasn't all that different, but I had to learn what kind of talent I could go after. And then we just had to really get after it because we had seven seniors. So, I mean, we have seven freshmen this year.
Yeah.
So that's priority one. I had a really Haley works with she's already moved to Division One, but South Carolina upstate. But Haley was great in kind of showing me what the type of player we had to look for. So that was really important. I think, you know, I had to learn one of the things we didn't get to do in Division Three is, you know, we couldn't start till October 15th. Well, in Division Two, I get some hours on the court with them before we can start practice. So I get 4 hours of skill work on the court, and I get 4 hours of conditioning. So the conditioning part, we have a strength coach. So 3 hours of that was with our strength coach. And then we did like an hour's worth of conditioning. And then I got 4 hours on the floor. So we got right to work, working with the kids in small groups. And sometimes we had team workouts, trying to do a lot of skill work, just a lot of fundamental work. I didn't get to do that in Division III. So that was all new for me. So I had to learn how, you know, how to do that. Most of the time is with, it's not been a lot of, it sounds weird, but not a lot of individual improving of kids, if that makes sense. So that was the other thing, I guess, I had to learn and really get after right away.
So when you have everybody's got a learning curve in any change situation, but, and the audio was a little shaky there for a minute, but you said Haley Horseman was your assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And she's moved on to Division I level at South Carolina Upstate. Having that to kind of lean on as an assistant, you still, I mean, I've been around you enough to know that one of the things that you really enjoy about the game is different parts of the game are a puzzle. It's what mm-hmm. they are. And so that whole balancing out the hours that you get on the floor with them, the hours that they get with the strength coach, do you feel like maybe going through it once has created some more clarity for you and how you want to proceed with that, you know, kind of creating that puzzle?
Yes, absolutely. I already feel 100 million times better. I just had last week a meeting with our staff and we put the calendar together and we're doing things quite a bit different than we did last year already. So I think that's really, really helped me a lot. This year what's even stranger, I guess, or it's put a wrinkle into things is we can start October 6th this year. We get the same amount of days before our first game because we still have to give them 2 days off now during the week. But the NCAA put in this that we could start roughly a month before our first game now. It gives us some flexibility with the gym times with volleyball and everything going on. So that's been a little different too. So we can actually start practice about 9 days earlier than we started last year. So it made our calendar this year, our fall calendar, a little different too. But I feel, I can't even tell you how much better I feel about this year than I did last.
Well, that's good to hear. And again, these are the basketball things that matter a great deal. And we could spend probably an hour podcast on individual workouts and skill development and how you mm-hmm. approach it now versus, and I'd love to maybe do some of that someday, but I also know from spending the time around you that I did in 16 and or 15 and 16 and some of that time frame in there, that 3 or 4 year period, you are a monster believer in culture and mission statement and core values. is as important to you maybe as the X's and O's. If it's not as important as recruiting, it's damn close. I mean, you the two are the two are married together. Getting people to fit that to fit what you believe marries well with your mission statement and the beliefs that you have. When you've got the deficit that you've got on the floor that you're trying to make up in recruiting, is that important? And now you're learning the whole process of how you can implement and install the system that you believe in. And where does your focus on culture fit into what you're trying to get done at Findlay?
Certainly we started with that some last year too. You know, I did a lot of the things that I did at Northern with the book, and we did some community service things and all of that. But again, John, that takes time. I'm not sure that probably we got done from a culture standpoint what we needed to get done last year. But I think you're going to see a huge step forward in that this year because of last year. So we started and we did a lot of that stuff. I think we're going to be following up with a lot more of that this year, if that makes any sense. It's kind of funny you asked. I just went down today and found a site for our retreat. I like to do a team retreat off campus, and I found a really nice place in the Salina area that I'm going to use this year. And the book we're reading is called Chop Wood, Carry Water. So I think it's going to be a great start to our to that piece, I guess, this year. And I also have Coach Sue Ramsey coming in. I don't know if people know who Sue is, but she was a former coach at Ashland two coaches ago. Mm-hmm. She won a national championship there. Sue does a lot of work with personalities and speaking, and so she's going to come speak to our team. So we've added some things that we didn't do last year, but, you know, we kind of laid that foundation a little bit last year, and we're really going to follow up with it this year, and I think it will be a lot better. Those kids did a great job in trying last year, but again, it's a difficult change for them. That was stuff they weren't used to doing.
Are you,
so you got to convince them.
Are you still big on the personality test?
I am. The colors one. That's what colors. He's going to do with that. Yeah. I love it.
I think it's great. I absolutely love it. I should let you do a commercial for it. Any coaches that are listening that aren't familiar with it, if you would just briefly give the name of it, at least, and they could Google it and find it for themselves.
I got to think of the name of it. We call it the colors test. It's a, so basically Sue will bring these booklets in, and it's kind of a dumbed down version of a lot of those major personality tests that everybody's seen out there.
Right.
But Sue will bring these books in, and the kids will answer different questions, and it basically will come up with what their strong color is. And the colors are blue, gold, orange, and green. So gold is kind of your hyper-organized person. Everybody wants to have a list. Everybody's got to be on time. As you can imagine, like, gold is my strong color.
We're all golds.
Yeah. Coaches generally are golds. If you're not, we're in trouble probably. But blues are your more emotional kids. You know, they're, for women especially, like, you know, they're the kids that'll cry pretty easily. Or everything touches them. They're very, very emotional. But also, those are kind of your rule breakers, too. They take chances. And I'm giving you kind of a real brief version of this. Yeah. And your greens are your thinkers, those question kids. I always called my greens at Northern were the engineers.
Yep.
They want to know why for everything. And that color probably drove me the most crazy. But So basically, what it does is it really allows me, first of all, to know how to coach them better if I know their personality. And second of all, if they know each other's kind of, like, you know, what kind of pushes the buttons for each other, then it really helps them understand why we react and why we do the things that we do, or why we behave the way we do. I don't know. It's just a fun way to do it. The kids really enjoy it. And you know, it gives us something to fall back on as the season goes forward. The best teams I've had have had the most diverse amount of colors. Like, you don't want a whole bunch of golds like you on the team.
Right.
You don't want everybody to be alike. You want everybody to have to bring something to the table. So it's the best when you've got a pretty good mix of colors. if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I was fascinated by it the first couple times I experienced it, and I have not been involved with anything like it since, so it's always something I'm curious about. What I kind of want to touch on before we get into the more of the quote unquote basketball side of this and your you know approach to coaching your team is more continue with the leadership stuff. I mean, being the personality type that you are and what you just described, that's not going to change. And being aware of the mental health concerns that have kind of been so present for all of us recently, we've touched on that. Would you say that there's been anything that's really identifiable in terms of a difference in your leadership approach, maybe with your group now than what might have existed 7, 8, 9 years ago?
I'm probably a lot more patient, I think. I've tried to be. I thought I was a lot more patient last year. I think I'm trying to be a little bit more flexible than I was, I think. A lot of my old players would probably say that I've gone soft. I don't know that that's the case, but I probably have a little more understanding because of, you know, you mentioned the COVID piece earlier. I think that has changed my perspective a little bit. So I don't think I've gone soft, but I think I'm more flexible and patient.
I think the older players are supposed to tell us we've gotten soft. I think that's their obligation. Mm-hmm. I think it happens. Yeah. I think it happens in every program with every coach. And yeah. I think development may look like softness, but I think you're right. I think there's understanding and I think there's perspective and, for whatever it's worth, I also think empathy is something that comes along late for a lot of people. And, mm-hmm. and I think empathy helps to a very high degree, but you also came into a situation where you inherited a program that you described. You inherited, an assistant coach, I think, or did you have to hire Haley when you got the job?
No, I hired Haley when I got the job.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so
it was both of us were new.
two brand new staff people. And to make things, I don't know if more difficult would be the appropriate way to describe it, but to make things consistent for you, let's put it that way. You've also had to hire a new assistant this year because Haley's moved on. And that's just happened within the last maybe handful of days here.
Yeah. Isaac White, he just started on the 31st of July. So, we're a week and a half in. I'm super excited about Isaac. He's young, but he's awesome. His dad, actually, I found out today, which I didn't know this, his dad went to Bluffton and was at Bluffton the same time I was when I was a student.
Wow.
So his dad played for Guy, Neil.
Okay.
I just found that out today, actually. So, but Isaac was at UMass Lowell last year as an assistant. And prior to that, he was actually with Charlie Ernst at Finley. So he was on the guy's side. And he's really wanted to move over to the women's side and thankfully, and he's just been great so far. You know, it's hard to hire a new assistant after a year, but I think it's going to be great. I also have two other people who are going to volunteer with me. Greg Knopf volunteered with me last year. Greg was a longtime high school coach. When I knew him, he was at Marion Harding, and he got out of coaching and teaching, and now he does a lot of personal training with high school athletes here in the Findlay area. So Greg was awesome for us last year, and he's going to continue. And now we're going to have Heidi Hahn. Heidi Schlegel was her maiden name. Heidi played at Wapakoneta.
Oh, yeah.
And then went on to play at Youngstown State, and then she played overseas in Germany. So she's actually in the Findlay area. Her and her husband live here. Her husband works at Marathon, and she has two little ones now. And she approached me and said, hey, I'd really like to, if you can use a volunteer, I'd like to get back into it a little bit. So I was pretty excited to have Heidi jump on board. So there's going to be four of us now, which will be really nice. And it's exciting. You know, it's like a new beginning.
I don't want to ask this and sound too ill-informed or maybe sound like I'm completely out of touch with reality, but there's no other way to ask this question than I frame it this way. You've had experience coaching with female assistants, with male assistants. You've had success across the board and certainly been very good at building programs. Can you talk maybe a little bit about the differences between having a lead assistant that's female versus having a lead assistant that's male? And does it cause you to approach things any differently?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I never really thought about that before. I don't think it causes me to approach things any differently. I like the idea of having a balance of male and female. I think it's good for our girls. A lot of our girls were coached by males. A lot of high school coaches are male. So I like that. Not that it was bad when there were two females. I think, you know, that's great too, because you have role models, and I think the girls need to see female role models. So I don't know that I approach it any differently. But I mean, I guess I've enjoyed every assistant I've had, I've learned something from. So, obviously, my best assistant was Mark, as you know. I'll give him a shout out, Mark Huelsman, who's now the head coach at Northern. I think he's the top of the heap, I guess. But I've enjoyed everyone I've worked with, and I haven't really thought about their gender so much, but I think it's good to have some diversity.
Well, I always enjoyed being a part of the staff, and I thought that, again, when you're close to something, sometimes you don't always see every little wrinkle, wart, or foible. But I felt like in the time that I was with your staff, there was, for at least for a little while, there was myself and Mark, and then Kenzie was there for a little bit. And mm-hmm. so we had a really good balance. I thought a staff that functioned really well. And I'm looking at your current staff. What you just described is somewhat similar. Again, two volunteers, a male and a female, and a full-time male. I think, at least from the outside, from 30,000 foot view, you know, trying to compare similarities and differences, I feel like you're in a spot with a young assistant with an older assistant that's quote unquote volunteer, but been with your program. There's a chance to have some stability maybe that might not be as readily evident in the second year as what it looks like maybe there could be. So I want to kind of get into a little bit about your philosophy of coaching, not so much, I guess, philosophy as when I worked for you, we ran a lot of stuff. Offensively, we did different things. I mean, before you had talked on the earlier podcast that we did about you were a Princeton offense coach for a while, and then you ran some continuity offenses. You ran a lot of different sets. We run a lot of different stuff. How do you approach the offensive end of the floor with your circumstance at Finley? Recruiting is a little different. The caliber of athlete that you have, all those things are all different than they were. How do you approach the offensive end of the floor now, and is it any different than it ever has been?
I don't know if it's that much different. I think it has to do with, you know, our personnel. I think I have to fit what we're going to do with what we have from a personnel standpoint. You know, last year, we ran a lot of Princeton stuff. We needed the game to slow down. We needed it to be lower scoring. So we tried to do a lot of that. Now, I thought we were in a lot of games last year. We didn't win a lot of games, but we were in a lot of games, and we were pretty competitive in most games. There were a few that, you know, Ashland at Ashland and Grand Valley and some of those teams we weren't very competitive in. But in the most of the games, especially in our conference, we were pretty competitive if we kept the game low scoring. So we did a lot of Princeton stuff last year. How I'd like to play is I'd like it to be a little faster pace. I like to play inside out. You know, but that requires us to have, we got to have good post players. We've got to have people who can get the ball up the floor quickly. And hopefully that's what we've recruited. But, you know, we're going to be freshmen this year. So we're going to try a little bit to be a little bit more up-tempo offensively this year. I want our offense to be more balanced. Again, I think what they were used to is, they were throwing it inside a lot to Sydney Kinn, who was a great player. She was an All-American at Tampa last year. So, you know, what we had to try to do was find a balance. And I think we started to do that, and that's why we were in some games. But I think we'll have a better balance this year, but we'll be very, very young. So, you know, we'll probably still do a little bit of that Princeton stuff. Honestly, you know, we're allowed to watch open gyms a little bit. So I'm going to watch some of that, and Isaac's going to watch, and we're all going to sit and try to evaluate that a little bit and then kind of decide what we really can do this year. But, you know, it always revolves around being balanced. I don't want to turn the ball over. We got to take better care of the ball, you know, and take really good shots. That's what I think about our offense. You know, I've always been, you know, one that I hate turnovers, and we turned it over a lot last year. I went through one game, John, you won't believe this, that we had 38 turnovers in a game and won it.
Wow.
I never think I'd make it off the floor. But we won it.
So, amen.
I don't know how we did it, but we did.
Well,
but we, you know, we really got to do a better job of taking care of the ball. We got to be more balanced, and I'd like to play a little quicker if we can, if that makes any sense. How we do that, I'm not quite sure yet. You know, I've always loved ball screens too. I think they're difficult to guard. I like playing, you know, I like roll replace action. There's a lot of good stuff out there. So, but we'll figure it out. And then defensively, as you know, I like man-to-man defense. So we spend a lot of time on defense, and the team I inherited last year had only played zone. So that was another change for them. So
yeah, that's hopefully a big change.
Yeah.
Now, do you still dabble with the matchup?
We do. We will more this year. I had to really establish the fact that we could just play good man-to-man pack line principles last year. So, and again, they hadn't done much man-to-man at all. All they played was zone. So everything I taught them last year was new.
Yeah. Yep. The challenge in that kind of speaks for itself. Okay. So I've got a couple more questions to ask. This has become a new feature on the podcast. I recorded one recently with Bob Galone, who after retiring at Denison is now back as a high school coach in the Columbus area. And
oh, wow.
He took the job at Grandview Heights.
Wow.
And so when I found out he was back in, I had him on the podcast, and he referenced a book that he had read called Inside Out Coaching. And the guy that wrote the book had talked about using four questions, that were important to him. And now Bob uses it when he interviews assistants. So I'm going to ask you four questions here in just a minute, but I've got one before I get to that. You talked a little bit about how, you know, consuming this becomes and how challenging it is. And it's tough on families, and it's tough to maintain balance. And I think I mentioned to you off mic that when Neil Young from Northern was on the podcast, he gave a lot of good insights into things, but he created shared with me a term that he and his wife use. When we talk about trying to have balance and create balance between coaching and living, he said they essentially have decided that that's a fallacy. Like the season takes what it takes. And so they kind of focus on what they term appropriate imbalance. When you get ready to take a swing at this whole program building thing for the third time, and you've touched on a lot of things that you've learned, and again, go back if people want to episode 28, the very first season of this, and you'll get into a lot of that conversation. But what's your focus on, or how has your ability with living closer and all that, have you been able to create a little more of a better balance? How do you feel about the balance that you have between what this job can be and is, and still, you know, how your family operates?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do feel like I have better balance. Obviously, like you said, and Neil mentioned, there are certain times during the season where that's just impossible. It's the way the job is. But, you know, I have to be very purposeful about that, and I have to let things go. So I think I'm better at, you know, one good thing is, it sounds crazy, but I can just come home for lunch, and I can come home and spend an hour at home and just not be there and be at lunch. And I think that's been really good for me. I couldn't do that at Northern.
Right.
Because of where I lived. So, and that was my choice. So, but that's one little thing. I tell myself, you know, there's a certain time that I'm going to stop work, and I'm going to stop. And I do. I didn't used to do that. I think, you know, part of the reason for having a younger assistant, there's lots of reasons, but I think another reason, and Isaac and I have talked about this, is he's going to take on, you know, there's certain things that I'm just not going to go to that he's going to go to.
Right.
And I've had to let that go, and I'm okay with it, and he's okay with it. And, you know, that's given me some balance, you know. We have a place up in Marblehead that I'm going to, you know, go to. And I don't get to go as often as I'd like, but I go, and I make myself go. You know, I took a 5-day vacation, and I didn't open up my computer for the whole week. So those kinds of things, like I have to be more purposeful about doing it. But, you know, age does that to you a little bit. But I also try to preach balance, even to the girls. Like, if you think about anything in your life, you've got to have balance. It's the way you eat. If you're not balanced in the way you eat, you're going to have problems. If you're not balanced in the way that you exercise, if you're not, everything in life requires balance. So I have to practice what I preach, and I think I've gotten a lot better and more purposeful about it.
Well, that leads me into the four questions that I want to ask, and they are literally it's a four pack of questions that belong together. And I want to credit Coach Galone for introducing me to the concept. I think the author's name was Joe Ehrman, and he wrote a book called Inside Out Coaching. But the four questions are pretty direct and pretty straightforward. The first of the four is, why do you coach?
Well, I love being around young people. I love impacting their lives. And I love basketball. It's been my passion, I think, probably since I was maybe 10 years old. But I think the most rewarding thing about coaching is just seeing how the kids grow. And, you know, wins are great, but nothing's better. Like all the weddings and I get to go to and watching them, you know, with their children and so on. That's the best part of coaching. I think that's why I do it.
And so secondly, as a follow-up to that, why do you coach the way that you coach?
Good question.
That one stumped me too when I read it.
Yeah. I mean, I try to, like, I hope this comes across this way, but I try to let kids know, the way that I coach is that I want kids to know that I care about them. And so hopefully I coach that way because I care about them. I truly care about what happens to them, not just on the basketball court, but off the court in their lives. So I hope that's the way that I coach. That's why I coach the way that I do.
And so what then would you say, question three, what is it like to be coached by you?
I think at times it could be tough because I think I'm demanding. But I think, I hope that it's also, they feel comfortable in coming to me. I hope that, I think I'm fair. I think that I try never to, I think the kids, I treat kids differently because they have to be coached differently, but I think I'm fair with kids. And I think they know that I love them. I hope that anyway. I don't know if that's really a good answer to your question. I don't know what it's like to be coached by me, but I think it could be demanding. I think they know that I love them, and I hope it's memorable at some point for them, but I don't know.
You know, it's interesting that you would say that because we don't know. And the thing that Coach Galone mentioned to me is he said there's probably legit value in every coach at some point, every off season, asking that question.
That's something I'm going to write down and I'm going to actually ask. So I think that's good. That's good.
I think when Coach shared those with me, I was like, well, we're going to do this at the end of every podcast going forward. Cause I think there's value in it, but it leads to the last question. And this one is always hard for me because I'm going to have a podcast where I have people on that are new to the profession, people that are, you know, I just recorded a podcast with Nick Sales, just finished his first year as a head college coach. I'll have high school coaches. So I think it's easy to assume a certain response to what I'm about to ask you, particularly when I can point to the numbers and you don't care, but I can say she's got over 360, more than 350, maybe more than 360 wins and you know, conference championships and NCAA tournament appearances and an Elite Eight appearance. And I say all that to say not everybody has that as their measuring stick. Not everybody has that to point to, but everybody has to answer this question in some way with that as the backdrop. We all want to win. That's the bottom line. But what is your definition of success?
I can tell you it's not wins. For me, again, it's kind of what I've described. You know, I can't really say at Finley yet because I've only been there a year. But, you know, one of the things I've always been super proud of at Northern is when we have our alumni day, I'd love for somebody to come back and see how many of those women return for alumni day. It's usually 40 to 50 of them with their families, with their, you know, their husbands, their kids, their partners, whoever. And they come back and they're excited to see each other. One of the coolest things, I think it was two summers ago now, I went to Tori Wiss's wedding, and she had a bunch of the girls that were on our team in her wedding, and of course invited a bunch of us. And her dad came up to me, and they were all up there dancing and getting their pictures taken. And he goes, "Coach, this is what you created. They love each other. Because this is what you created." And to me, that's success. I mean, they stay in touch. They love each other. We're family. If any one of them called me to, you know, and needed me, I'd be there in a heartbeat for them. And I know that they would be there for me. And I think it's the coolest thing. You know, another one that comes to mind is when Mark got married, our whole team was there. And his former boss, Jerry Sheeby, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry said to me, he goes, "Man," he goes, "this is the best team bonding thing I've ever seen." He goes, "How did you get this?" And I go, "I don't know, Coach. I mean, it's just how we are." You know, I think that's success. And I don't know if that's a good way to describe it. I don't have a word for it, but I guess that they all love each other, I think, is success.
Coach, it's a great answer. And look, my job is not to blow smoke up anybody's ass when I do this podcast. I think you're a national treasure, and I have valued what little time we spent together, and the opportunity to have been a part of your program was an unbelievable blessing to a guy like me. And I am selfish in this regard. When you took the job at Finley, I was over the moon excited to have you back doing what I think you do extremely well. And I think the people at Finley, the university campus community, and the young women that are fortunate enough to be coached by you are going to get to experience something that ultimately ends up like what you just described. And that's what makes me excited. So you've got a busy life and a lot going on. I won't keep you any longer. I so appreciate your time. And I know your season is just ahead. It's going to be here before you know it. And I hope and pray that you get some R&R and you get yourself recharged, get ready to go. And I look forward to hopefully making it to a practice here early in the fall.
Well, sure. You're welcome anytime. And John, I really have appreciated talking with you. And of course, when you helped us, I mean, I've been super lucky to have a lot of wonderful people in my life, and I count you as one of them. So I really appreciate all that you've done and all I've learned from you too. And, you know, I've just been a super lucky person. I don't know that it's just being around the right people, I think.
Well, we're all appreciative, and we, again, wish you absolute nothing but the best going forward.
Thanks, John.
Thanks so much, Coach. Yep. Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.